Sip on the go with a Starbucks Iced Shaken Espresso. Our signature roast, shaken with ice, then finished with a splash of milk. Customize it to match your style on the Starbucks app. Make today a good day.
You're listening to the Right Room Podcast with me, Rupen Paul. I'm a stand-up comedian from India, and this is my weekly podcast, a show where I have conversations with people whom I consider accomplished, entertaining, and inspiring.
Hey, hello, and welcome to the Right Room Podcast. My name is Rupen Paul, and welcome to another episode where I have a great guest on the podcast with me. So joining me via call from Chennai is a guy who actually sails for a living. So I would classify him as, you know, part outdoorsman, part athlete, and also part entrepreneur. So joining me is Abhimanyu Panwar. Abhimanyu, thank you so much for doing this, man.
Hi, Rupen. Thank you so much. Hi, everyone. It's wonderful to be on your show. And yeah, I've been looking forward to the whole conversation.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, this is so interesting that I have you on the podcast, right? Because like Ajay has, of course, been on the podcast before. Ajay Samson is another comedian friend of ours. And he put me in touch with you. And he told me, dude, I have... And he didn't even tell me anything about you. He said like, hey, do you want to come sailing with me? And I was like, that's a little bit far-fetched to have as a phone call. And I said, what do you mean? And then he said, no, I have a friend who sails. And then I said, dude, I'd love to have a conversation with him and find out how he got there. So before we get into this, can you very quickly, you can be as detailed as possible, but tell people what you do for a living.
So basically what I do for a living is I've started a startup called Sportifying India, where we are trying to promote niche sports, and mainly our focus is in sports fishing, sailing, and yacht charter, and we are operational from Chennai. Mainly sailing because I've been part of the sport for more than 14 years, and I really wanted to do something and give it back to the sport. So the best possible way was for me to take up something and find a way to promote the sport on the whole. So yeah, that's what I do. I sail for my living.
Wow, that's a really interesting profession. Like, how did you even come across sailing?
Yeah, so this is one of the best questions I've always been asked. Is because my journey has been quite unique. How I started off was I went to a sailing gathering mainly, and it was a carnival that was hosted by the sailing club, and I had gone there to promote a turtle protection program, like an NGO program. And that's where I met a lot of interesting people, young kids of my age. I was about 11 years at that time. And I met the commodore of the club, and he told me, listen, why don't you come sailing with me? And first thought was it was like something like to do with ocean swimming or something. So I was like, okay, yeah, This sounds interesting. Let's just hit it up on Sunday. So once I went to the sailing club, I saw all these, you know, unique boats out there with, you know, small sails. And that intrigued me in the first shot itself. And I was like, okay, I'll just try it out. And the interest just built inside me, you know, to try out the sport. So once I went out in the ocean, that feeling was completely different and unique. So once I got back, I came and told my dad, you know, I want to join the sport and it looks very interesting. Can you give me more knowledge about it? And that's how, you know, slowly my parents started supporting me. They were like, okay, let's just keep trying it out. And every Sunday I used to just go there because of the lunch. The lunch used to be amazing in the sailing club. And slowly it grew on me. Once I started competing is when I fell in love with the sport, like completely. I loved the racing part of it and the competition that used to happen regularly. So, and once I started winning, it was just, I was like hooked onto it forever.
Right. And where was this? Where was this the first time where you went to the sailing club? Which part of India? Which part of the world?
Oh, yeah. So, I'm sorry, I forgot about that. So, I went to a club called Royal Madras Yacht Club. It started in 1911. By the Britishers, and it's one of the oldest clubs in Chennai, in India actually. It's the second oldest sailing club. It has a sister club in Bombay called the Royal Bombay Yacht Club, which is very popular.
Okay.
So this is where we started off. They used to hold a lot of carnival events, and that's where I'd been. Like I'd gone there for promoting an NGO project for my dad's friend, and that's where the journey started off.
Yeah. So this, like, the seed was, like, you know, sown, like, when you were about 11 years, you were saying?
Yes. So 11 is when I first got the introduction to sailing. But I always knew about sailing because I used to stay next to the sailing club. So that's the interesting part.
Okay,
that
right.
I used to stay to, like, the adjacent wall to the sailing club. But we never went there. Mm-hmm. Like, once I told my dad, listen, I don't know what these guys do, but I want to go there. And my dad was like, see, they just go out at sea, they puke and they come back. So I'm not too sure if you want to do the same. I never. Yeah, so that just killed my vibe. Yeah. I was like, okay, probably, you know, I don't think I'm made for the sea. But only when I went for the carnival, I was like, shit, I should have been doing this right from starting. Right. And this is at age of 9 when I had seen it first time. Mm-hmm. And just took me 2 years to reach to the sailing club.
Right. So did it involve, like, some convincing of your parents initially?
Not really, because my parents have always been very supportive, especially when it comes to sports. So even before sailing, I had already played badminton, tennis, squash, everything at regional to national level. And they were always up for sports. So there was never a moment where they would have stopped me, right? So once I told them I want to go sailing, their only point was, listen, we are not going to drop you. Make sure you get your own transportation and you go to the port. I'm not taking that chance. Rest is up to you. Yeah. So my dad, till now, in my whole 14 years journey, he has just come to the sailing club twice. That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So basically, I said, as long as you don't trouble us, you do whatever you want.
Yeah, it was as simple as that.
No, I think that's a very crucial thing, dude. I mean, I've obviously not sailed or anything, but, you know, when I started comedy, I think when I was a student, right? And when I was still studying in college, and my parents left me the fuck alone only because I did everything on my own, including, like, you know, paying for all the bills related to comedy. So it's like, oh, he's doing something, but it's all his money, so let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah, I think
I think that's important.
That's, like, the best approach a parent can have, you know. What it does is it makes you responsible right from, you know, taking up the sport or any challenge. Like, even in your journey, as you said, that, you know, you went into the comedy part of it. And the parents would support you, even, like, however they can. But they wouldn't get involved with the whole thing, right? That just, it's your space for you to discover. And that's the best part about, I mean, the journey for me, especially.
Yeah. Let's talk about that a little bit, all right? Because you also do a bunch of things with respect to your startup, right? Which is called Sportifying India. Did I get that right?
Yes, it's Sportifying India.
Sportifying India. And where, like you were talking to me before the podcast started, where you deal with, like, niche sports, right? And I'll get into what niche sports is in a bit. But just this, right, with respect to, like, you know, parents not coming in the way of their kids and then just allowing their kids to explore what they would like to explore, right? And then kids take it upon themselves to, you know, further improve on their skills that fascinates them or something that they're really obsessed about, which is, in your case, sailing. So do you see that a lot? Because right now, I'm sure you deal with a lot of athletes, right? And you deal with a lot of people coming to try sports. Do you see that, you know, like, maybe one of the reasons why sports is not taken off that much in India could be because as students, as, like, you know, as young individuals, when before the age of 20, we rely too much on, like, say, an elder's approval before we take something up.
True. I mean, this has been a pattern, I think, not only in niche sport, but any sport, you know. There used to be a time where parents were solely focused on studies because obviously there was no surplus of income, right, for them to even spend on sports. Over the years, what has happened is parents have started realizing that, you know, studies is not the only thing. I mean, because of all the social activism that has happened, we have seen a lot of examples where, you know, kids from underprivileged have gone and performed at the highest level. So slowly people have started understanding the importance of sport, and what it has done is that tends to happen is that parents start to get involved more and more, right? But the culture in India is we always depend on the approval, like you rightly said. I often see this, that, you know, the parents would come, they'll discuss it out, and they would come every time that the kid wants to come and sail, right? So sometimes what happens is that the kid never gets the independence or, you know, the sense of responsibility that he himself is an athlete. Because sometimes what happens is most of the parents, they just overdo everything. Like, they would get involved in the sport more than the kid. And that's when the failure starts to kick in. This is very common in all the sports. It's not only sailing. But I've seen it across all the sports where, you know, parents are over-involved. There's a limit where, you know, parents should stop. They should just let the kids do what they are supposed to do and explore the sport on their own and learn on their own. Mm-hmm. Often, what happens is if the parents have too much money or an influence, they would try and push their kids even before the kid is ready for that type of racing or competition or anything, right? And that's where the kids tend to fail. And the failure becomes a bigger problem later on. So this is a trend in India which has come culturally, where we are used to taking permission.
I probably would think it's across the world, right? Not just India.
No, but see, when I've gone abroad for racing, I've seen this where, you know, young kids, I'll give you an example. I had gone for IODA Asians, which is basically an Asian championship for sailing for young kids below the age of 15. And the guy who came and won the championship there, he was from Spain. He was just 10 years old and he had come all the way alone. He used to, you know, rig his own boat. He had everything on his own. And the guy just came on one day, won the whole championship, went back alone. No parents, nobody involved, right?
Right.
For us, when we went, there were like 5 parents who traveled along. Like, except my parents, everyone else's parents were there in the competition. And which, I mean, in a way, just didn't make sense. If you're going abroad, you're taking all those responsibility. The kid himself should be able to learn all those aspects, right? It's not only the racing part alone, but it's developing of the kid itself, right? For him to develop that personality where he can handle things on his own, take up the challenges. The challenge is not only the racing or the sporting aspect, right? There are a lot of learnings that you learn outside. I mean, even to book a cab or, you know, make payments, understand how to budget everything. All those become a problem culturally because we are so dependent on our parents. And this is right from childhood where, you know, kids have been taught that way, that you have to take approval for everything. So for certain things, it's good. But but on the whole, once you have let your kid get involved in a sport, you should just have that faith or trust that the kid will be able to manage everything. That will take time.
I think that's very well said. Yeah. I think that's very well said. And I think even in your case, like you were just mentioning, which really struck me, right? Like your dad is, like you've been sailing for 14 years, you said, right? And your dad has been to like the sailing club probably twice.
Yeah.
Right? And which means, and I think that has a lot to do with why you're in this game for so long. You've been for 14 years because it's not like the you know, the push or the drive to do this is not coming from your parents. It's coming from you.
True. I mean, I was passionate. I got involved in the sport on my own, right? And it's not that my parents never supported. Like, my club bill would come. I would take the bill. I would give it to my dad and tell him this is the bill. And his general question would be, why is this expensive? What are these costs? You should go and ask the club, you know, ask these questions when you're making the payment. These are just small things which added up to a larger personality on the whole, right? And it's not that my dad didn't really care. He would obviously care about everything. Like, if I tell him that I'm going for a national, he would ask me, how are you going to, you know, transport your boat? Who's going to look after your accommodation there? Those general questions would always be there. But it's not that he would get involved unless I asked him for. Like, only if I tell him, listen, I need you to help me drive down the boat. It's only when he would get involved, he would be like, okay.
Yeah, I think that's like a great parent. I think that's like a great parent, right? Like the most ideal way like parenting could probably be, as opposed to, you know, that's the other end also, right? Of like parenting where they just be like, hey, you need to wake up on time because you're going to miss your sailing class.
Yeah. True.
Right? And I think from the outside, the problem with that is like your sense of discipline, like in your case, comes from you. Like you built that sense of discipline yourself because you were so passionate about it, right? As opposed to that sense of an idea of discipline being handed over from another parent or from a coach or from someone who is basically using you to achieve something great.
I mean, the kid, like kid or an individual, right? To do anything, you yourself have to be passionate or involved in that. It has to come from within you that, you know, that you really want to achieve that. Only then you will start finding people who would want to support you, help you, or even for a matter of fact, your parents would start behaving the way you want them to, right? that's when you'll start becoming better at that discipline. Until then, if somebody is forcing it down your throat, it's not going to work. I mean, so there will be a moment where you'll reach failure, yeah. And that's when you will realize that, listen, it's been too late and I don't think I'm made for this. That is only because somebody had been pushing it for you and it wasn't within you that you wanted to achieve it.
Right. Yeah, because I don't know if you have read. Have you read Open? This book called Open by Andre Agassi?
But I'll show Will after this.
The reason why I bring this up is he talks about the exact same thing. Because the premise of the book is really interesting. The premise of the book is, Andre Agassi is one of the greatest tennis players of all time, right? So what he brings up is, he says, like, I hate tennis. I absolutely hate tennis. It's the worst game ever, right? But the reason why I don't leave it is because I'm not good at anything else. And he brings it back to an earlier point in his life. He said, like, the reason why I hate tennis is because my entire childhood, my dad would, you know, at least emotionally, mentally, just torture me to attend every single tennis class that I could. So he pushed me into getting good at tennis, right? And so at a later point, he really had to sit and question and said, why do I even want to do this?
Yeah, this often comes.
And it basically goes on to say, in my
journey, there have been so many times. I think everyone goes through this. When the failure part comes in, right? It kicks in. Then you start questioning yourself, why do I actually do this? For a living or even for passion. Like most of the nationals when I used to take part, it was just out of passion. It wasn't like, you know, I have to make it. Without this, I will not have a life. That was never a thinking. It was just that I'm very passionate about, I like the racing aspect of it and I want to compete. So it was always I which mattered. It wasn't because my dad wants me to compete. He wants to see me there. So that type of mental stress is completely different. So when the feeling came within myself, I would always bounce back easily. For me, it was always easy to take the failure, right? But what happens in other cases, when the failure kicks in and it was someone else pushing you, you start feeling that, you know, you're responsible for everyone's feeling that time. And that is like the worst thing that could happen to an athlete.
Right.
When you start feeling that others' success and others' failure is all dependent on you.
Right. I think that's a very interesting perspective that you shed light on. But I want to know from you in your case, right? Because so you find this passion at the age of 11, right? And like your parents are really supportive. You have these really cool parents with you. But now you do obviously do a bunch of extra, for lack of better words, conditioning, right? To put yourself in a place to compete. So what was that like? What are the extra things that you did apart from like the regular people who are just out there sailing for fun that, you know, that kind of rose out of your own desire to succeed and compete, right? So what are that extra journey that you took in this line of sailing itself? So
I think the biggest pushback or the step that I'd taken was to start the company in the first place. I mean, there's a point until when everyone, like all the youth sailors in India, stop at 19. They don't go professional as such. That is only because the expense of the sport is really high and to make a living out of the sport is absolutely zero. Unless and until you join the services like army or navy, there's no way you're going to make money for sailing, right? And that is only because there was never a system or a company that would, there was never a system in place, to be honest. So once I shifted back from France, the first thought I had was, you know, I always had this feeling or a thought that there should be a company or a brand which helps people to be part of the sport itself. Like even after you have stopped racing, suppose now a lot of kids stop racing at the age of 19, but they are passionate about the sport. They just don't know what to do with it, right? So there was never a platform which was available. And that's when I thought to myself that, listen, somebody has to make a shift and a change. And I think it's the right time for me to do it. And because I have, like, I'm fortunate enough to have really good, cool parents, they were ready to support me in that journey. Yeah. So that was the biggest step where, you know, normal kid would start earning, you know, start making a living and all of that. I jumped across that and I was like, no, it's okay. It's, even if it takes time for me to make money for a living, I'm okay with it as long as I'm able to build a bigger goal and a vision. I'm able to reach that vision. So that was the biggest step. And with that itself, I'm still trying to, you know, be part of the racing as such. I'm trying to build a racing team. All that is an extra effort. It's not something that is required. But I want to drive that change where, you know, there is a sporting team which does only racing for a living, which is like a cultural thing abroad, but it is not available in India. So to leave, you know, earning and to shift right. into building something right from scratch, it was the biggest step that I've taken. And apart from that, I think with the right. sport itself, to change the mindset of people every day, you know, when I speak to people, I tell them this is what I'm trying to do. They are impressed, but still to get them to come and try out the sport or to make them believe that this is safe or everything is normal and it's a cultural thing, it takes time. That effort of speaking to people, reaching out to everyone is the biggest effort that I have to put each and every day.
Mm-hmm. Right. So tell me about this, right? Because so you're in France right now. And at some point while you're at France, first of all, why were you at France competing, or were you learning, or were you training?
No. So I'd gone there for my MSc in international business. And post that, I was staying in Paris and I was doing I was involved with a company and helping them, you know, establish their international business. So I was making good money there. After right. that, I had an option to come back and sail the world championship for the country. So that was first step. And the second thing, what happened is when I had come back to India just to go through the trials and make a team and everything for world championship, is when my dad had a heart attack. So he had to go through a bypass surgery. So once that happened, my family was more or less in the thought that, you know, I should just shift back and there should be somebody with the family all the time.
Yes.
So once I moved back is when I started thinking to myself, should I start applying for jobs or, you know, should I just, you know, create my own platform and everything, whatever vision that I already had, should I just give it a go and try it out? So that was the biggest moment in my life, you know, where I decided, okay, let me just start this company and let's see what happens.
Right. So you kind of, you you know, adapted to the, you know, the curveball that life threw at you. Like your dad was not well and you had to come home to take care of stuff, right? And then you kind of just adapted to it. Like you said, like, you know, I either can take a job or I can create my own job. And I think with that in mind, and given your experience in sailing, you kind of recognize like the gaps that are there in the system for like upcoming athletes, and even for athletes who want to take up the sport, who are already into the sport, right? And want to take it to the next level. And so you kind of figure out like, you know, there's a system that needs to be in place, and you wanted to, you know, step up and, you know, try and kind of patch up the broken system that's currently there.
True that. I mean, see, life in my thought process, what I've understood over the years is that life will keep giving you opportunities, right? There's always a view that you have about a situation, either it's positive or negative. It all depends on your view as to how you think a thing is going, right? Like for me, my dad's situation was a negative. But post that, what I thought to myself is this is also an opportunity or you know, a sign for me to start something of my own. This is the moment where I take a decision, like, do I want to pursue my passion or should I just, you know, take up the responsibilities and just start making a living, right? But I know I will not be happy there.
Yeah.
So like you rightly said, I mean, it's all about taking the curveball and, you know, turning it into your perspective. And like you said, that it is not only for people who just want to get involved in the sport, it is also for the athletes who have already been involved in the sport to get back into the sport. And it's more like a cultural thing that I wanted to change. I found the loopholes. It's always everyone has known that these are the loopholes. It's just that nobody wanted to act upon it because it takes a lot of time and effort. And you have to do it right from scratch.
You know, I was speaking to a lot of people on this podcast, right? And one of the things which I kind of find recurring and which I also relate to is that when you have an idea like this, right, like in your case, you're going to start like a niche sports kind of a startup, right? Now, what happens is, like many cases, I've seen that people already have this idea, right? And it's kind of lodged somewhere at the back of their minds. And because life is busy and life is kind of okay, they don't really pay too much attention to it. And then when shit hits the fan, they're like, okay, now the only way I can survive is probably to act on my idea.
True. I mean,
so
it's an often seeing, but you'll see it in across the field. It's the common element, right? Because but often for people, they always have choices, right? It is just the decision to take up that challenge is the toughest decision. But always everyone, like even a normal person who's working in a company, he'll also go through tough decisions, right? And it's sometimes you're just scared of the outcome is when you don't want to take the risk and you stick to the regular stuff. That's the only difference.
So at that point of time, right, like even I want to just dig a little bit deeper right over here. So at this point of time, like you've gone through like this horrible, like your dad's not well. It's kind of a adversity that life has thrown like to you. So what was that inner dialogue, right? Like when which you were kind of, you know, battling on a daily basis, like, you know, either I can take a job or I can do something, because taking a job is going to help me immediately. Right, it's going to give like short-term results. Immediately, I'm going to be making money. I'm going to be, you know, in a much better place. And there's also the other thing, like, hey, or I can start up something which is going to help people. It's going to plug a lot of loopholes in the system, and in the long run, I'm going to build something that I'm going to be proud of, which will have more value in my life in the long run than this current job. So, what was that dialogue like? Did you have to, you know, particularly go through like a inner conflict?
True, there was right from day one, there was always an inner conflict, like you said, right? There was a situation where my dad was not well, and I had the option to, you know, support the family through an additional income, which would have come through my working, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was a second option where I could start a company of my own, start going through that journey of, you know, going through the scratches, building something of my own, and probably look for a long-term vision. But to be honest, I was just looking at it in a short-term way itself. Like, there was only two situations where there was money and there was something which I liked doing. It was just two things at that moment. And because emotionally I was already going through a tough time, all I wanted was something to do positive, right? For me, positive would have been to start something of my own in terms of where I could sail, I could take decision and I'll be happy. I knew that I would be happy there, right? So that way, the only conflict was for me to speak to all the members of my family and tell them that, listen, this is what I'm thinking. What is your opinion on it, right? And then I started speaking to mom. I spoke to my sister. I spoke to my dad once he was fine. And I told them, these are the two constraints. What do you really need me to, you know, support you with money, or you are fine with, you know, what we have? Or do you want something more? And they were like, see, for us, what matters is if you're happy, it's fine. We don't need extra money. I make good enough for us to, you know, have food on our table. So I'm fine with that. So if you want to do this and go ahead, just start it off. Because right now, for me personally, in the situation that I was in, I didn't, you know, I didn't have responsibilities of, you know, paying up for my family. My family is good enough, touch wood. Like my dad is an retired Coast Guard officer, so he makes good enough for the family to survive. So I didn't have any additional responsibilities on the whole. So right then my sister was like, you know, this is the best time where you can try. Even if you fail, it is fine, you know. Later on in your life, if suppose I was you know, around 30-32 or something, where, you know, family was dependent on my income and everything, it would have been a very tough decision for me to even try out a basic stuff. You know, even a basic mistake would have just hampered my whole life. Even when I go through the journey, I've started learning, meeting so many new people. This is what I feel every day. Like, this is the positive which I'm really happy about, is that I meet a lot of people and I've started building contacts, right? And that is only because people can relate to me and they know that I'm trying to do something different. And they also appreciate that fact, right? Now, I've connected with you. It's only because I'm doing something different. Like, I've tried taking that step. And that is why you appreciate that fact, right? So financially, it might not work. It might not be viable. But I mean, touch wood, right now it is viable. But I'm just saying, in future, suppose it, even if it doesn't, I know I can enter into other space because I know a lot of people who would understand that, you know, I am the person who has the skill set. It's just that the thing didn't work out in the way I wanted it to.
I think something what you said really touched a nerve with me. When you said I was asking you, right, like this, a job is going to help you in the short term, and you know, doing something like a startup is going to help you in the long term. And you correctly said that, you know, to be honest, I was not looking at it on a long term thing. I was looking at it as a short term thing. Like, this is going to be my happy space, and this is what I'm going to enter into right now, and this is the place that I'm going to be happiest about, and so I'm going to thrive. And I think it really touched a nerve with even me, because I think when I started doing stand up as well, right, it was in kind of very similar circumstances. I always wanted to do stand up, and I didn't do it for a long time. And then I joined a degree, right? I joined a master's degree, and I fucking hated that degree so much that I just realized, oh crap, okay, this is something that I thought would be good, but it's horrible. And the only way I can survive this is to do comedy. And I didn't think about money. I didn't think about audience sizes. I didn't think that, you know, we'll have shows, but there'll be like 3 people, 2 people. I didn't think of any of that. I just realized that this is the one thing I'm going to do where I'm going to be happy, and fuck everything else.
True. I mean, that's what is missing in half the people's life, you know, right? If you start calculating all the constraints, that's always going to be something which is always lacking, right? So you have to just prioritize what is important for you at that moment. I mean, this is what I do in decision making. I mean, what is the most important thing at the moment, and find a solution for that instead of, you know, going into all the constraints. It's important to see all the constraints, but take decision on what is most important, right? If that moment, if I would have started calculating all the risk, I would have never, you know, gone into sailing itself in the first place. Right from my childhood, I shouldn't have been part of the sailing as a sport itself, because I've only invested money. To get a return out of it, I've just got 50%, not even 50% of the money I've invested in the sport, right?
Yeah.
So if we start looking at all these things, then you will just kill the vibe and kill all your aspiration and the love for those things that you like doing, right?
That's really beautifully put, because you said, like, this is not just something with big decisions. I think it's something with respect to all decisions in life, right? Like, don't think too much. I think the constraints place a huge, I mean, they already kind of limit you in so many ways. But instead, if you just prioritize your decisions in terms of importance, things would be a lot less, above everything, a lot less worry-free.
And I mean, the biggest thing, you know, which people miss out at the moment is to think simple. There's what happens is nowadays what has happened, this is the trend with most of the things, even in business or, you know, life decisions or anything. We start thinking too much, and, you know, we take in too many constraints. Whereas the answer to a problem could just be as simple as, you know, just walking it down, or, you know, just buying a small thing or whatever. It can be anything. But it's always that simple answer that we miss out. We ourselves start making things complicated, overthink about a
problem. Right. And in a way, I think, you know, you need that kind of thinking for, like, the job that you do, right? Because you're out at sea, and that's like it's like you're a force of nature that you're actually going against, right? Or it's kind of sailing with also, if you could put it that way. And you're out there, I think you're really exposed. I don't even know, like, see, I'm a complete dumbass when it comes to all of this, right? So you'll have to pardon my ignorance. So with respect to sailing, I don't even know, like, you know, do you have, like, some sort of a backup in case, like, the winds don't favor you? What exactly, how unsafe are you at sea?
So to be honest, with the sporting aspect, there are 3 formats to sailing. Okay, I'll just give you a brief introduction to the sport so that you understand the difference. So there's something known as fleet racing, which happens close to the shore, and it's like a running race. You have multiple races, and based on your scores, the person wins, right? There's something known as match racing, which is basically, it's a one-on-one race. There'll be only 2 people trying to give each other penalty and finish ahead of the other guy. And there's something known as offshore racing. Offshore racing is basically you sail from one city to another. You are trying to cover as much distance as possible. And it's very simple. You start at point A and you finish at point B. So, for example, we recently sailed from Chennai to Pondicherry. So, the race starts in Chennai, ends in Pondicherry, right? So now each of them have a different constraint altogether. So when we are doing fleet racing, it's more about tactical knowledge, you know, like you said, if the wind is not favorable, there's nothing that you can do. It's all natural. That's the beauty of the sport. So it's equal to everyone. Equipment wise, you have the same equipment as everyone. Nature wise, you get the same wind. It's the tide, current, everything is the same, right? It's just based on your knowledge and skill that you make a difference, right? So in fleet racing, you have multiple races to cover up. You have to be more consistent than, you know, to win all the races. Whereas, and the help is very easy. It's the safest. You have to wear a life jacket. There are no races kept in storm, right?
Okay.
So that way the sport is very safe. But when it comes to offshore racing, where you have to travel from point A to B in a long distance, there what happens is you have to go through all kind of weathers, right? They would just start the race and your job is just to reach point B. Now, how you reach is up to you. You can go through a storm, you can be in a light wind. You'll go through all kind of winds, right? And the nearest help, it all depends on how the conditions are. If the condition is really rough and the sea is really bad, even if you send a distress help, the nearest help would take 5 to 6 hours until the cloud clears or the sea becomes normal. Neither the Coast Guard can come nor the Navy can come to help you. So that is a different challenge altogether, right? But the sport on the whole is always very safe. It's only when you do offshore racing where it can go to extremes. Because if suppose you were in middle of the sea and, you know, a storm comes in, a cyclone comes in, there's nothing you can do about it. You just try to save yourself by doing the basics right. Whereas if you're doing a basic fleet racing, it's very close to the shore. You'll always have rescue boats. You'll have people on guard. They'll always support you. And even if you don't know swimming, it's fine. Like the sport, even if you don't know swimming, it's okay because you're always wearing life jacket. It's mandatory. Right. Even if you're just doing normal sailing outside, you have to wear life jacket. So basic basic safety in the sport is it's the main in the sport. Even the rule books, when it's written, the first rule is you have to have safety equipment all the time.
Right.
And all aspects of safety have to be taken care. Like even if in a race something goes wrong, and as a competitor I go and help that person, it we'll be given more points than the, you know, everyone else. So that way the rules, regulation, the way it is designed, the sport has always been very safe.
It's very interesting that you said that, right? Because there are two things that really, you know, stuck out. You said like there's fleet racing, there's offshore racing. And of course, fleet racing, I'm guessing, is a lot of fun. But the thing that really sounds extremely interesting is the offshore racing, because you're sailing from city A to city B. And that's where all the shit can, that's where, you know, some shit can go wrong, right? Like a storm, you were saying. And first of all, first question is, what is the longest you've sailed?
So the longest that I've sailed in India is basically from Chennai to Pondicherry. I've got into offshore racing quite recently.
Right.
I've just started doing it from 2019. My biggest, the longest leg that I've sailed is in China. We had an Olympic test event that was happening there for offshore. Because it's going to come in the 2024 Olympics. Offshore racing. It was never part of the Olympic circuit. It's quite recent that they're going to add it into the Olympic circuit. Before this, the most popular offshore racing is called the Volvo Ocean Race, which they race around the world. The longest that I've sailed is a lake in China where we sailed from morning 6 to next day 6. So we're just continuously racing.
Okay. So it's like 24.
In India, that's in 24 India, hours. I've just done Chennai to Pondi, which is about 150 kilometers.
And how long did it take you?
So it depends on the wind. While going south, it took us only 10 hours. But on the way return, it took us 28 hours.
28 hours?
Yeah. And actually, this was the second time we were trying to do it. The first time when we tried sailing back from Pondi to Chennai, we were hit by multiple storms. And on the fifth storm, the sail just tore. It gave away.
Oh my God. So how do you manage?
So we were stuck almost 50 kilometers off Pondicherry. And the thought was, do we go back to Pondi or we still try, you know, going to Chennai?
Yeah.
Then we just took a call on the whole thing that let's just go back to Pondicherry. So we have a rescue engine, a small one.
Okay.
5 HP. Right. But our mainsail was intact. So we were still able to sail back.
Okay. Yeah, so what happens generally when a storm, you know, is at you know, the storm suddenly breaks out and, you know, your sails are exposed to the winds and they can get torn. What happens? How many times have you encountered that?
So for us, we went through 5 different squalls, basically. And so what we tend to do is we know, seeing the clouds, we tend to know that, you know, the winds are going to pick up and, you know, things are not going to go right. So we first put on harnesses for all the crew and everyone, just to make sure that people will be on the boat itself, right? When the waves hit, or, you know, even if the boat heals too much, people will always be part of the boat. Even if they get, if they get washed out, they will be still next to the boat, because at night it is very difficult to find anybody in the sea, right? I couldn't even see my crew members while sailing the boat. I couldn't see the guy sitting next to me. It was that pitch dark. Apart from that, the next safety thing is we try secure everything in the boat. We try and make sure that we secure bags, sails, extra sails, everything should be secure, because if it is loose, it can hit people and people can slip and hurt themselves, right? So we try and secure that. And third is people just start praying.
I'm assuming you can't be an atheist.
Even if you are, you'll start believing in some god.
Yeah, or you'll believe in like karma or something. Some belief to keep it going. Yeah.
To be honest, until then, like, because I've been doing a lot of fleet racing right from early age, I never thought the sport was difficult or challenging that way. It was like, okay, it's just the tactical part of it. But once, I remember in this storm itself, there was a time when there was a lot of breeze which hit our sail, and the boat almost, you know, went sideways. Like, it was healing so much that we thought it might capsize. But obviously the boat is designed in such a way it doesn't capsize. Yeah. And that's when I realized, you know, if something breaks, or, you know, if somebody gets hurt, the nearest help is going to take us 6 hours. And because I was the skipper of the boat, it hit me more, because I was like the leader of making sure everything is fine. Everyone is in my responsibility, kind of thing. I remember at night when we were sailing, one of our ropes broke, which were really important to keep the sail intact with the boat. But right from starting, I had a feeling that it might happen. So I was very clear in my mind how I have to repair it. Right. So the moment it broke, there was a small panic, but I made sure that, you know, I calmed everyone in the boat, made sure everyone is safe. And then we started finding solution, and we made sure that the thing is repaired for us to continue our journey. So important is to keep calm and be, you know, on your mind. Like, you should start thinking on your, you know, when things start going wrong, you have to just, you have to be on your feet to, you know, find solutions.
Right. I think that's an interesting thing that you brought up when you said, like, you were the skipper, right? You were like the person in charge, and everyone is under your care, and in a way under, not too much, but at least in everyone's head, like, you're the guy in charge. So you're kind of protecting them also. So I think that's a real big thing for, like, you to stay calm, right? Because as soon as people see you freaking out, they'll be like, oh my God, like, the guy in charge is freaking out.
True. So the thing was, like, I was the skipper of the boat only because I have so much more experience than the others on the boat. And I had people who are 50 years old, they were 60 years old on the boat, who are passionate sailors, they sail quite often. But see, that's the best part about the sport, right? That's the beauty, that age didn't matter. What mattered was the experience and confidence that they had in me, right? They were like, okay, Abhi is going to be our skipper because he knows everything in and out. And we'll follow his steps, whatever he asks us to do, that's what would happen. And that's what happened in the boat as well. So while we were sailing, people would respect you for the, you know, knowledge that you have and the experience that you have. And no matter what is the age difference, they would listen to me. So even when things went wrong, their first, like you said, their first reaction was to see what I was doing, right? Just because I was calm, they had a surety that things are fine and we are all safe.
Yeah.
So as a leader, yeah, that was very important, that, you know, I remain calm and find solutions rather than create a panic and, you know, make sure that it should never be in a moment where others start losing trust in you. Yeah,
I think that's a valid point, right? Because I think probably it goes more to do with sailing than it has to do with how it talks about leadership. Because I think the only way you can ever be at a position of leadership is by putting in that much of experience. And because you put yourself through that much of experience, you kind of know, you kind of are aware of the shit that can go wrong. Like in your case, you're saying about that rope, right? It's a really important rope. And you just made a mental note before you started out. Like, that's a really important rope. And what if something happens to that? So you kind of made a mental note to yourself, like, we can repair it. And so when that really happened, you were in a position to, fix the problem calmly because you'd already anticipated it. So I think experience and putting in that time, right? Like in your case, we started sailing from 11 years. That goes a long way in just building confidence.
True. The number of years as an experience just helps to build trust in others. But to be honest, what really matters is the knowledge of the boat, right? I could have just started it sailing the next day. But as long as I have the knowledge on the whole about this boat, the equipment, how things work in that boat, it's good enough, right? We actually often tend to look into numbers more than the knowledge. That's where a lot of failure also comes in place. So it is important that the experience is there, but what is more important is the knowledge.
Yeah, I want to quickly, we have to wrap this episode up. But before we wrap, I have a few more questions about, your startup, right? Give a little more insight. So you basically, your startup Sportifying India is into niche sports and, in trying to popularize niche sports. So for the people who don't know about niche sports, could you just talk a little bit about it and also talk about the work that your startup is specifically doing?
True. So niche sports on the whole are basically sports which are not popular or financially not that good, or facility wise they are not that great, right? So that's how we categorize them to be a niche sport. For example, it can be horse riding, it can be sailing, it can be kayaking. All in few sports like sailing, their facilities exist. It's just that the sport is not popular or it does not have the financial backing that it should have. In terms of horse riding, it is popular, but they don't have the facilities anymore or the finances to run the facilities, right? You take flying. There used to be a lot of flying clubs, but most of them are shutting down. It is only because they don't have that many members or the financial background to help people get into the sport, right?
Right.
So that's how we categorize sports to be niche or not. For our company, what the goal was to basically build a platform where we can help people book their experiences, get into the sport firsthand, learn it if they want to, right? There should be a way for them to learn the sport as well. It's not only just going in for the first time, experiencing it, and then, cutting off. If you're passionate, you like the sport, there should be a way for you to take it up as well, right? Mm-hmm. And if you want to go professional, even that should be an option. More than that, what we are trying to do is to bring all this community together.
Right.
For example, sailing, surfing, kayaking, sports fishing, all of us have a common element in it. Like the culture around these sports is similar, right? The thought processes are similar. People's passion is also towards the ocean, kind of similar, right? But there's no one umbrella which brings everyone together. On the whole, if you just take surfing community, it must be about 8,000 people throughout India. Whereas sailing would be about 20,000-25,000 people who know about sailing, are passionate about it, or involved with it. Right? Yeah. But together, if we bring all of them together, it can be a community on the whole of, more than 1 lakh people, where people can share their passion together. So that's what we are trying to build with Sportifying India. We are working on the software part of it. To build an app where people can, interact, they can connect with the sport, they can get updates about the sport, or for a matter of fact, book their experiences. Even if they want to just go try out the sport for the first time, they should be able to do it. And they should know various facilities that exist. Similarly, that's what we are trying to do. But right now, our present focus is into the sport of sailing. We help people get into the sport, celebrate their experiences if they want to. Like, a lot of people just like coming sailing and celebrating their birthdays or anniversaries, or even for corporate events. So we get a lot of corporate team building exercises out at sea. So that is also something that we are working on.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a lot of work that you guys are doing. And it's truly great to speak to someone like you, Abhimanyu, because the main thing is what I've got from this conversation, right? Like you meet a lot of people, even in like a lot of creative pursuits and from non-creative pursuits, is that people are doing something, but a lot of people kind of have limitations in their thinking. But what I already know this about you in this 1 hour that we've spoke is that the restrictions that you place on yourself are very little. And that is so refreshing to see. And I really am so happy to have had this conversation with you.
Rupan, it's been my pleasure. You know, it's very hard to find people who you can match your wavelength to, right? And people who really understand what we all go through and give us a platform to speak to and reach out to people. So thank you so much for providing that platform. Because
my pleasure.
Something that is missing in our country. And through people like you, we are able to reach out to more and more people. Right.
Yes, that's the hope.
That's
so
very important.
That's definitely the hope, to get people to, you know, not let like the immediate restrictions of what could stop them, you know, try and remove that from getting them getting in the way, and then just pursuing what is your happy place, just like how you found sailing, right? So I think the more people do that, the next generation gets informed. Like, for example, like the next generation from your family is going to get inspired by your example, because they're not going to have restrictions in their thinking, right? And they're going to go and dream like more outrageous dreams. And I think as a society, we free ourselves up of so much of worry, firstly, and also we move towards a happier life.
I have seen this people evolving, you know, on the whole. Like in our country, the country itself is evolving slowly with time. Especially with the comedy field itself, you take an example, 5 years ago, not many people knew stand-up comedy as much. Right?
Yeah.
But right now, the scene is completely different. And people are not afraid to try it out.
Yeah.
That is something important. And that's a good change for the society on the whole.
Yeah, I can personally tell that, because like, you know, I've been filing my tax returns for like 2 years in a row, right? And last year my CA was like, oh, so you're doing comedy, all right, okay. She didn't ask any questions. She kind of gave me a look like, okay, I'm just going to file his returns as a job, and then I'm just going to finish it off and then go on to like actual clients, right? But this time when I filed my returns, she was like, so tell me, sir, how is life as a stand-up comedian? It seems to be pretty okay.
True. And now I can totally relate to this, you know, when I go and meet my CA. Earlier, you used to just give me a look, okay, you know, do I really have to file your returns? Is there something for me to do? And now slowly he's like, you guys are actually doing good enough, you know, you can, if you just expand. And now he's giving us ideas, you know, you should do this, I'll get you connected to these people. I'm like, wow. You could have done that from day one.
So I think if there's anything that we have learned from this conversation, you know you're doing well when your CA is happy with you.
True. Completely agree with this. CA, cool. And slowly when your friends start, you know, talking to you and telling you, listen, can we go sailing or can we come to your shows?
Yeah.
That's when you start realizing, okay, things are becoming better.
Things are improving. That's true. Yeah, so cool, everyone. You just want to quickly plug your social media handles, so if anyone wants to get in touch with you or wants to find out a little more about Sportifying India, how do they get in touch with you?
So right now we are only active on our Facebook and Instagram. On Instagram it's called sportifying.india, and same as Facebook, you can just go to www.facebook.com/sportifyingindia. And you'll be able to get into our page. You can send us a message. You can DM us. And we'll be more than happy to, you know, answer all your queries. Get you the kind of need or the help that you require to get into this.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Thank you so much, Abhimanyu, for doing this. And hopefully we'll talk to you
again.
Thank
you so much, Rupen. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. And good, fun conversation, right? It was too much in depth. It's been a while since
I've spoken.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right, cool, guys. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you guys in the next episode.